Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I thought I read that you actually had a bolt through your head. Is that accurate?
That's what they think it was.
Whiskey Myers can officially say they were Yellowstone before Yellowstone was cool. The Texas-based country rockers agreed to film season one of Yellowstone without really knowing what the show was. If you know Cody Cannon and company, you understand this is on brand for a group that's never really worried too much about what's next and what the side effects may be. Today, guitarist John Jeffers joins the Dutton Rules podcast to talk about the Yellowstone experience. Along the way, he'll share a secret about their scene backing Rip and Beth as they dance into the night. I'm Addison Hager, and Billy Duke spent a half hour with John. The group's new Tornillo album drops on July 29th, and if I were to compare it to an iconic Yellowstone scene, I'd say it's the scene where Rip lets a bull loose in the bar, times 10. Billy and I will also talk briefly about how Yellowstone creator Taylor Sheridan has changed lives with the music he chooses for key scenes. The Yellowstone soundtrack is as important as the action. Tap follow if you're new and give a rating or review at the end if you appreciate our broad coverage of Yellowstone, 1883, 1923, and eventually the Four Sixes. Welcome to Season 2 of Dutton Rules, a Yellowstone 1923 podcast.
Hello, Addison!
Hello, Billy. It is good to be back. And I'm excited today because we're talking two things that we love, especially you. Yellowstone and music, which is, music obviously is our cup of tea.
I have been really looking forward to doing this episode for a while. I talked to Whiskey Myers, it was probably a couple of months ago because they had some touring commitments. So I've been kind of just holding on to this interview and this excuse, which ended up being a kind of a good thing because some news has developed as it pertains to country music and Yellowstone.
Yeah, I'm really, really excited to jump into that a little bit later in this podcast and talk about, should we give people a teaser of who we're talking about?
Well, Lainey Wilson, I think it's out there, you know, and she's a friend of Taste of Countries and a friend of ours. And I feel pretty confident that, you know, as long as the show grants her permission, we'll have her on the podcast at some point to talk about what she's up to.
Well, I am excited because she's the first, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think she's the first female vocalist, right? Because they've all been males.
They've certainly had a lot of women whose songs have been used like as a soundtrack right for the show, but I don't know if they've had any female featured performers yet. So you're right.
Mm-hmm. Whiskey Myers was kind of the OG, if you will, of the singers getting to be on this show. They were, you know, the first act to be recognized as a Yellowstone band. What season were they on and what episode could we start finding their music?
It was back in season one, episode 4, and they were physically there during, I think, one of the first real romance scenes between Rip and Beth Dutton. It was the scene they're in the bar, and Rip comes into the bar, Beth's being flirted with, and Rip, I think, ends up hitting a guy who won't go away. And then he sits down, and they have a little romantic talk, and there's a slow dance to the song Stone, and that's a Whiskey Myers original. And they're performing it live there in the scene. The actual episode is kind of interesting because it's the train station. It's the first time we really get a feel for what happens at the train station. But this scene with Rip and Beth was just sort of a microcosm of the entire plot line.
For artists, this is a huge lift for them. You know, their songs are getting to the ears of people who may not listen to them or find them otherwise. How did Whiskey Myers getting to be on the show, what did that do for them?
Well, I talked to John Jeffers from Whiskey Myers, and the whole conversation's coming up here. And about 15 minutes into the interview, we start to talk specifically about that question. What did Yellowstone do for him? And it's kind of funny because the short answer or at least the answer at first, is not a whole lot. Now, that's not to say that it didn't give them a huge lift, because it certainly did eventually. But remember, season one of Yellowstone, there wasn't all this buzz. You know, ratings and viewership was about a quarter of a third, maybe, of what we find today. So it wasn't really until later, when people went back and started streaming old episodes, that they started to discover Whiskey Myers and Google them and attract a lot of fans. Certainly wasn't immediate for them.
Who do you think, in your personal opinion, all the artists who've been on the show or their music has been on the show, who do you think has really, this show has been a catalyst for them?
I might be just answering with my personal favorite performer from the show, but Ryan Bingham's music career, I think, probably has gotten the biggest kiss, and especially during season four. I mean, we knew him as a singer and songwriter, and it turns out he's a great actor and a great cowboy as well. But some of the songs he performed during season four, particularly The Poet, which is the song that he plays for Lloyd after they kind of make peace, I mean, that was just really a pin drop kind of performance. And then later he performs that song Hallelujah for Beth out in the barn. That was just another one of those kind of signature performances. That sent me down a huge Ryan Bingham wormhole. And I've kind of really been deep in that playlist since. So for me, I think Ryan Bingham is probably the answer. It's a little bit unfair because, you know, he's also an actor on the show as well.
Well, and I would agree with you. That's who I kind of had in my head as well, because I don't know, you know, this past year he was slated, he performed at, you know, the Houston Rodeo and just different things that I don't know, and correct me if you feel differently on this, but I don't know if it weren't for the show, if he would have had, like, if he would have performed at the Houston Rodeo and stuff, you know, and had that name kind of, about, like, even people I knew, they're like, oh, Ryan Bingham, you know, from Yellowstone, you know, that's how they were kind of referencing him. You know, is playing at the rodeo. So I think the opportunities like that also helped because of the show.
About it.
Who else would you say, outside of Ryan Bingham, have really, really gotten a big lift because of the show?
Well, there's a couple of, if you're following country music currently, there's a couple of really clear examples. One is a new artist named Jackson Dean, and his song Don't Come Lookin' was featured in season 4, episode 7 of Yellowstone, called Keep the Wolves Close. And that song went on to become his debut radio single at country radio. And if I'm correct, I think it might be top 20, maybe even top 10 currently. So it really sort of kickstarted the career for him. And there's been some others. We mentioned Lainey Wilson, and she's going to be on the show for season 5. But this isn't her first time on Yellowstone. She's had 5, 6, 7 songs placed on Yellowstone kind of throughout the 4 seasons. The most notable to me coming in season 2, episode 1, the song Working Overtime. Rip lets a bull loose in a bar, and as he does that, Working Overtime is playing. So she got a big lift from that, I think.
Well, and then not only, you know, I think that's kind of, she's coming off of already just personal, you know, music success and writing that, that's just been a major, major movement for her. And then in addition, like you said, her music has already been on Yellowstone, but I think it's cool that she's actually getting to play, you know, a character in Yellowstone. I think that's what I'm personally excited for, of the acting being doubled onto that.
Have you, like, there's kind of a juicy theory about her character too that's really unconfirmed.
What is it?
It's like from the Reddit boards. Well, she's...
You love Reddit, Billy.
I get into it a little bit, but the idea is that her and Beth are... She's a character from Beth's past. Maybe an old friend, an old nemesis, and they either cause some trouble together or kind of butt heads in some way. The word mercurial is used to describe the relationship between Beth and this friend, who some people think is Lainey Wilson's character.
Ooh, that's juicy. She'll probably teach her a few things a man ought to know.
Oh, zing. I see what you did there.
Did you, did you like what I did there? Mm-hmm. Okay, well, outside of Lainey Wilson, who else would you say had a huge lift because of the show?
Artists like Coulter Wall, I think, got a big lift. Shane Smith and the Saints had a really nice lift. But the one I guess I want to focus on, because he's so relevant right now, an artist named Zach Bryan. He had a song called Flying and Crying in season 4, episode 5, called Under a Blanket of Red. And this was the scene with Buster Welch. The late Buster Welch was in the scene, and Zach's song was playing. At the time, that was a nice moment, but Zach put it on his album, this massive album that is, depending on the week, been the number 1, 2, or 3 album in country music for the past several months. So he really kick-started his career after appearing on Yellowstone. So I don't know. It's so cool to me to find tangible successes. Like, people think like just having a song on a show is going to do you some good. And I don't know how often it does, because I don't know if they get paid really. But this is real. Like, they have had success because of these moments. And as you'll hear from John Jeffers, like, they're literally able to play bigger venues because of some of the success they had on Yellowstone.
Well, and when it comes to the songs that are specifically being played on the show, who chooses those songs?
That's a pretty good question. I think that there is a music director who kind of scouts and searches for certain songs. Publishers, I think, have started pitching Yellowstone songs as well. I remember having a conversation with a singer-songwriter named Ernest, who admitted that him and Thomas Rhett wrote a song that they want to get on Yellowstone. So they're not searching maybe like they once would. But ultimately, Taylor Sheridan, it's his call. Like, he was the one early on who started kind of tracking down these artists and getting permission to use their songs and really giving artists a lift in other ways. I think there was an episode where Taylor's character was wearing a t-shirt that said Shane Smith and the Saints. And then the song was played. Like, that's kind of above and beyond a way to give an artist, give a little shine to an artist who's not necessarily a commercial or a mainstream name.
Yeah, and I love that he does that as well. I think that's really cool. It's kind of the, like, a Taylor Swift, if you will, of hiding little Easter eggs and things.
Yeah, that's totally true. And, you know, it's neat to me, too, that he doesn't just focus on the underground artists. Like, if a Tim McGraw or a Johnny Cash or a Chris Stapleton song makes sense for a scene, you're going to find that. Like, the scene where John Dutton's dad dies. You hear Chris Stapleton singing Daddy Doesn't Pray Anymore. Totally appropriate song. That's a really, really big song off of a Smash album. But it's the right song for the right scene.
And to that point, Billy, you know, that's just consistent with what Taylor Sheridan's done across the board of his entire, you know, franchise of, you know, you can be, it's whatever fits. You can either be an actress that, like a Tim McGraw, who has acted before and all the above, or you can be, you know, like the gypsy Graziella Brancusi, who she had no acting experience before this. And it's just, you know, what are your abilities? And if you fit, great. I don't care about, you know, what your track record was beforehand. If you work for the show, great. And that's kind of what it sounds like music-wise. If it works, great. If you're a Tim McGraw, great. If you're this Joe Schmo off the corner, great. Which I think is cool.
You're absolutely right. He does what's best for the show, which, you know, an artist always strives to do. But in this commercial kind of economy where you got to turn a dollar, sometimes that gets lost. I want to give a little bit of love before we get to the Whiskey Myers interview to SavingCountryMusic.com. They do a really nice job of listing all the songs used episode by episode throughout each season of Yellowstone. And they even pick out songs that maybe if you're not paying attention, you might miss, like the music over playing over the speakers or in the cafeteria when they're having dinner or something. They'll pull it out and identify it. So that's kind of the best source to find this. They've done a great job throughout the episodes. So I wanted to give them a little bit of attention.
Before I kick it off with Billy and John Jeffers, because I know you guys are itching to get to that interview, email us at staff@tasteofcountry.com. I know Billy and I talked about our favorite moments so far on Yellowstone when it comes to music, but we want to hear yours. So email us. We always love reading those and we'll try to respond as quickly as possible. So it's always either Billy or myself responding. So it's not a robot. It is really, really us. So here's the interview with Billy Dukes and John Jeffers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Billy, what's going on, man?
I see you're in Shreveport, Louisiana, if I'm not mistaken, getting ready for a show tonight.
I am. I haven't been in Shreveport in years. We've got two in a row. I'm pretty sure this town owes me some money for some reason. I'm not sure.
Is that just
it's a big gambling. You say that?
Oh, all right. I was going to say, maybe you just say that about every town you kind of roll into.
Oh, no. I used to live in Tyler, Texas, which is only about, it's not too far from here, probably about 45 minutes. So we came out here a whole lot to gamble whenever in our college years.
The Tornillo album drops on July 29th, and man, this thing's melting my face off. It's high powered. It's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. We're pretty excited about it.
Do some of these more up-tempo songs especially, I mean, they have such a great live feel for them, to them on the album. Do you need to play them live before you commit to recording them?
No, I don't think so. Most of the time, the process kind of going into the recording is we kind of just get in a circle as a band, as a unit, and we run through all these songs. So I think we had around 34 or 35 songs for this album. So we don't necessarily play it live first to see a reaction. We kind of develop our own reaction as a band and to see how well we flow through the music before we actually record it.
How arduous is the recording process? Is that something y'all really enjoy and embrace, or is it kind of just a step to get to the stage again?
We definitely enjoy the stage a whole lot better, but we like the studio. There's a lot of magic that happens there that's you kind of can't replicate anywhere else, you know? And sometimes, like, going back to the live thing, if you do it live or if you do too much pre-production before the album, you can kind of waste some of the magic that does happen in the studio, because there's something in there that you just can't replicate, you know?
This album in particular, and maybe you guys have done this across some of your older albums as well, but what really stood out to me was the backing vocalist, that kind of mark, especially the last half of the album. Mission to Mars comes to mind. Can you tour with that kind of entourage, or do you got to figure out some other way?
Yeah, we can. We actually we used the same girls on the White album, the last album, so we just brought them in again for the new one. But yeah, we can definitely tour with them. I don't think we're going to do it full time with the horns and the girls, but we're going to bring them in for select shows and a couple of runs.
It's not too expensive then at this point. I mean, there's more bodies, more ways the money's got to go, more meals, mouths to feed.
Right. I think everything's expensive right now, so either way, it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah, that's practically another bus. And I'm pretty impressed. You brought your wife and your daughter out on the road with you. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, my wife and my son. Yeah, we don't get out. Yeah. No, you're good. He's only about 1.5, so he hasn't got out too much and actually toured a whole lot. But yeah, he's getting of age now to where he's very curious.
Probably not staying up late enough to see Dad on stage then, I would think.
No, usually not, but he's a night owl. He doesn't go to bed till about 9:30 or 10, as opposed to the rest of the normal children. They're usually hitting it like 7 or 8.
Yeah, my kids are in bed by like 8, and that's just because I need them in bed by 8.
I'm jealous. I mean, we try. He just refuses.
It's John Jeffers of Whiskey Myers. The new Tornillo album is dropping on July 29th. And, some of these songs, the experience, you kind of just get lost in the guitars and the rhythm and the shuffle and blues beat and everything going on. But when you listen deeper to a song, you know, John Wayne comes to mind. Like, there's a real message in those lyrics, especially the bridge of that song. It's not just high-octane rock.
Right.
Do people miss that? Or how important is it for you to kind of, for people to catch those, what you're trying to say?
Our fan base is pretty good at not missing it. And, you know, everybody says it so it becomes cliche, but we really do have some of the best fans. They're pretty smart cats out there that are listening to us. So, I mean, they always catch what we're talking about. But, you know, I guess we tend to hide kind of embedded in there a little more, I guess you could say, than just blatantly coming out with stuff. But, yeah.
I mean, often there's kind of a darker message kind of weaved in. Into the lyrics. Is that kind of representative of the whole band, or is that more just Cody's sort of point of view and y'all just kind of get behind it because the songs are good?
Right. Yeah, like you said, on the ones which he writes the majority of the songs, but yeah, we just kind of jump in there and we just kind of produce it together, you know, and make it as best as it possibly could be. But like I said, we usually do, you know, we'll do those 30 something songs and we'll pick out the ones that we want to stand behind best and that we believe in and, you know, get in there and try to make the magic happen.
You guys lived so much life between your last album and this album. Well, first, let me ask this. I mean, the Whiskey Myers album drops in 2019, end of the year. Y'all had a ton of momentum, and then the pandemic comes and seems to cripple everybody at the knees. Did that hit you guys especially hard?
Yeah, we were the first ones to go and the last ones to come back, you know, as far as the career was kind of concerned. But, and, you know, we were kind of at one of our peaks of our careers, which, unfortunately, it's always been that way for us. But we were at a special peak at that moment. You know, and they shut us down. We had to go home, and it was pretty scary times, to be honest. But, you know, we lived through it, and we took care of our guys. Everybody was on the road. Everybody was taken care of. Everybody survived, thank goodness, you know, just, you know, monetarily speaking. It was a pretty scary time, man, and we're very fortunate to be back out on the stages again, just doing what we love.
I've often said that bands had it roughest during the pandemic because there's 4, 5, 6 guys that all need to be in agreement on when you're coming back. And it's not just those guys, it's the wives. Yeah. Or maybe there's a kid, the drummer has a kid that has like a depleted immune system or something like that. That would kind of hold back the entire band. Yeah. Maybe that's what you mean by you're the last to go back on stage or come back.
Yeah. So, you know, there's 6 of us on stage, but all 6 of us have families, you know, and a couple of us have kids, and there's 12 total mouths that we tour with. There's 12 of us total, 2 tour buses, you know, drivers, the employees. So it's not, you know, whenever you try to get with a bigger picture, whenever something like that happens, it's there's a lot of pressure to, you're not just really worried about yourself. You're worried about 12 people and their families, you know, trying to survive through doing what they've done.
What was the darkest day kind of for Whiskey Myers during that pandemic?
The darkest day was day one. I think we were in Cleveland and we had to make a decision to whether do we shut it down, because the mayor of Cleveland, I think of Ohio, maybe he might have been the first one. So that first day we had to make a group decision. Do we go home right now or do we play these next shows, even though they're cutting capacities down? So we had to cancel the shows and we headed home, which ended up being the right move. So the next probably 2 or 3 weeks after that was the darkest, where we really started listening to what was going on and we got a feel for it. And it was like, hey, we're not going back. You know, we're not fixing the tour. We don't know how long that's going to take. So we had to develop a strategy to, you know, pay our guys and develop how we could keep food on the table. That was the hardest, darkest days for sure. And which ended up being 2 years, you know, over 2 years or something like that.
I mean, I always think back on those first days of the pandemic, and I think, like, there was a lot of festivals that were really kind of hemming and hawing about have to cancel the show, when obviously it was the right thing to do. I remember South by Southwest in particular was kind of sassy when they finally called it in. They kind of gave an FU to the city in a tweet. But I also remember we were washing our groceries, and that was just a weird ass thing to do then. And it feels weird now.
It was the strangest things. I cut us. We would wipe off the boxes, like boxes that were delivered from Amazon or something. We were spraying those down. You know, just nobody. The uncertainty of what was going on was just surreal.
You guys have lived so much life in the last 2 years until this album. I know you had a son, Cody, if I'm not mistaken, had a baby boy or a baby girl soon after.
Did too.
Of course, the pandemic. You had an accident on ATV. What songs on the album do some of those events show up on?
I wrote and sang a song called Heavy on Me on the record. Yeah. And I used to pray for a lot of stuff. And then, you know, whenever people would have hard times, you know, I used to pray, just go ahead and put it on me because I can handle it. You know, take the load off of the feeble ones around me and put it on me because I can handle it. Well, I guess the last time I prayed that I had that ATV accident. My wife was 7.5, 8 months pregnant, and we were moving into a brand new house during the pandemic. And, you know, I fractured my skull and I had to get transferred to another major hospital. Anyway, that it really shows up in that song. That's what I'm talking about, is having a kid. And, you know, I kind of got that prayer answered in a different sort of way, you know? Right. So it really made me open up my eyes to a lot of things that, you know, not only wear your seatbelt, but a whole lot of other deeper stuff than that.
You kind of underplaying the accident a little bit. I know you're pretty messed up and even almost lost your hearing for a good bit. And,
I'm grateful for it. You know, I'm grateful for what came out of it. But yeah, I definitely lost my hearing. I had total hearing loss for probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. But
wow.
We were going to do a surgery. We were going to do a surgery on it, and it was right behind this ear, and I fractured my skull. So we had some oxygen that was leaking in, and we had some issues. We had some bubbles of oxygen that was getting into my main artery, and we had some that they were worried about getting into my actual fracture. But long story short, it ended up okay. I didn't have to go through with the surgery, and I regained probably 60 or 70% of my hearing back. So that's what I was recommended to do, just watch it and see what happens. And I guess he was right. I'm thankful for what I got. So.
I thought I read that you actually had a bolt through your head. Is that accurate?
That's what they think it was. You know, I was kind of not good. But I wasn't wearing my seatbelt, and I wasn't being Evel Knievel. I wish I was, you know, shooting through fireworks, doing something crazy, but I wasn't. I just took off a little fast from a dead stop, and we rolled it, and we think a bolt actually, you know, punctured me right behind the ear and went in. Wear your seatbelt.
Wear your seatbelt, kids.
You don't have to be doing anything stupid to get hurt. You know?
It's John Jeffers from Whiskey Myers on the Dutton Rules podcast, and you and Cody go back a long, long time. Are you guys childhood friends, or was it more high school, college? Kind of where did you guys kind of pick up along the way?
Yeah, we were childhood friends. We grew up playing ball together. Our families have always known each other. We played baseball together growing up. We really got close in high school, though. About, 15, 16, 17, we got super close. And then we kind of never left each other's side since then.
There's an interesting article. I think it was an interview that maybe you both did in American Songwriter where Cody talked a little bit about how he kind of operates with blinders on. He doesn't pay attention to what else is going on in the industry. He doesn't think about old music that you guys have made. Do you have to balance that, or does anybody in the band try to balance that so that, you know, there is some sort of...
I do. I'm kind of that guy which, I'd like to be the blinders on all the time, but I feel like I do, try to... I don't concentrate on what's going on, but I try to stay up to date just so I know. Mm-hmm. So, whenever we get together and talk, me or some of the other guys are semi-knowledgeable whenever we have conversations about stuff. And then, his perspective is really good to take too. So I think it just meshes really well together to where we're not involved in it. You know, we don't have a say-so in it, but we know we're aware of what's going on to an extent.
I wonder if you could give me an example, and don't be afraid to get into the weeds a little bit, because I kind of sometimes live there, of where maybe your perspective on these things showed up either in your career or on an album over the last 5 years.
I think we had a song on the White Album called Bitch that I sang, so I'm pretty sure it showed up during that a little bit. I was a little angry and may have drank a couple of too many Miller Lights at the time, and I had pre-recorded that song, and then I showed the guys as we went into the studio, and everybody thought it was a no-brainer, so we stuck with it.
Do you guys enjoy both being dads now and your kids kind of playing together? Is that a little surreal?
I love it. Yeah, it's great. I've actually lost weight chasing him around.
Yeah.
I didn't know how much physical effort it is. But yeah, it's a trip. It's all the things you've been told by other parents and how it changes your life, and it's all true. Everything anybody has ever said about it changing for the better is absolutely true. It's the coolest thing in the world.
The thing for me, and I have three boys, and they're pretty big kids. I was starting to get up near 37, 38 years old in bath time with like your 2-year-old and trying to get that lug of sand out of the tub, man. You almost need to put a back brace on and chalk up your hands. And it's like, do this thing.
Exhaustion. Yeah. And me and my wife joke around. It's like, I'm the lucky one. I get to leave and go on tour, and she's stuck by herself, But she does a great job. She's a super mom.
No, but dad guilt is real, though.
Yeah.
Dad guilt is real. I mean, that's a real emotion where you kind of want to be there. I mean, if you're a good father, then dad guilt is real. I mean, I guess some people might blow it off. And, One of the things I do in preparing for an interview is I just like to kind of like basic Google search, like a phrase like is Whiskey Myers or does Whiskey Myers or something like that, and see what kind of autofills.
Yeah.
And I had to laugh out. Well, the one that popped up that made me laugh was, is Whiskey Myers a real band? And I know why people are asking that. It's because they saw you on Yellowstone several years ago and wanted to know if that group really existed.
It's real. That's funny. Yeah, I hadn't seen that, one. All right, well, we're real, for sure, and we are a band. We operate like a band. Whiskey Myers is not a guy. That is not the singer. It's just a band.
Speak to a little bit about, like, you guys were operating some almost a decade before the Yellowstone thing kind of came along, and that really kind of gave you a pretty good lift, I would imagine. Like, how big of a lift was it, and how many new fans found you just through not only season one, but I asked people kind of go back and watch all those episodes, because you guys got 6 or 7 songs in the show, I think, total.
Oh, sure, yeah. Our mind frame, our mindset going into it was, well, that's cool. Yeah, we're down to do that. I mean, we were open to do whatever, and then it was like, well, Kevin Costner's, you know, in it, and we're like, oh, shit, that's pretty cool, too. We should do it. I mean, we didn't really think a whole lot about it. We just thought we were going to go play on a show, and it was going to be fun. But we didn't know how big the show would be and how broad of an, like, a national audience that hasn't heard us before. So it opened us up to a whole new group of people that have never been exposed to our music. So it ended up being a pretty good deal for us, for sure.
Did you kind of level up in terms of the size of venues you were able to play nationally?
We did. We were, like I said, we've always been fortunate to be, on this level in our career. So yes. that just kept it in stride, and it kept pushing us forward into, bigger venues, more markets, and the exposure it gave us to the national, people that typically don't hear us. It definitely helped us for sure.
You had 2 songs on season 1, episode 4, and this was the train station episode. You had Frogman and then, of course, Stone, which is when Beth and Rip are slow dancing. But I would guess that the show wasn't even a thing when you filmed those scenes. Like, it was all in pre-production. So there'd be no way of knowing exactly what you were getting yourself into.
No, we had no clue. Like I was saying, we just thought it was going to be a show. You know, we just went into it with, like, yeah, it sounds cool. You know, we didn't expect to have any sort of positive reaction. We knew there wouldn't be a negative reaction, but the show became popular the more and more went on, and we were fortunate for it. I think it's just right timing, right moments, and the right song.
Yeah.
And the right place,
Did you have any interactions with either Cole Hauser or Kelly Riley or any of the cast through all that?
Yeah, Cole and Kelly, yeah, we interacted with all of them there for a minute. We didn't meet Kevin at that moment, but that was actually about a 12 or 13 hour shoot for that small, I think it was like a 4-minute scene or something like that. It was one day, full 12 or 13 hour day. We found a new respect for, actors and actresses like that, because they work pretty hard.
Are you just sort of pantomiming in the background, like pretending to play your instruments and sing? Is that how it works?
That is how it works, and we were doing that at first. And eventually we told the director, Taylor, and some of the producers, we're like, hey, man, we do a lot better job if we're actually playing. So long story short, we actually played, for probably 8 or 9 of those hours. We actually turned on, and we turned on the actual the PAs and everything, and we played for real.
Okay, cool. And it is kind of an iconic scene. That's where we are, not the scene. Oh, the scene's iconic, but the episode is, because that's where we're introduced to the train station sort of concept. Yeah. And that has become sort of the folklore of Yellowstone.
Sure.
Have you kind of learned of any other acts, musical acts, through that show? I mean, it's featured. Taylor's so good about featuring great music and really unique music through the 4 seasons.
Yeah, he's got a pretty broad spectrum. He does a really good job of not only finding, but I think he's also in tune to that, that's the scene that's around Texas regional area. That he does a really good job. Yeah, and there's so many good acts down there that don't receive that exposure, that work so hard. You know, it's really cool of a guy of his stature, like Taylor Sheridan, to reach deep and pull really cool acts like that to feature in such a prominent film.
There's some other really good musicians on that show too. Of course, Ryan Bingham, everybody sort of points to, who's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But like Denim Richards, who plays Colby in the Bunkhouse, he's like a trained opera singer, I think.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which is crazy.
And then Gil Birmingham, the Chief Rainwater, he's like a, I don't want to say he's a great guitar player because I don't know guitar playing so well that I'm in a position where I could call someone great, but it looks pretty damn good in the videos I've seen. Like he seems pretty legit playing some Stevie Ray Vaughan music. So now you guys got this album. Are you texting Taylor? Or are you calling and be like, hey, listen, man, we got this song. I think it'd be perfect for some sort of gunfight or something.
No, man, we've always lit a, and you know, it probably hurts us more than it's ever helped us, but we're usually pretty organic with things. We don't push stuff. We don't push the songwriting or the music. We usually never have a plan, and we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants, hoping it works out, you know, somehow. But yeah, we usually don't push. We don't ask for things, you know. Stuff usually just kind of shows up, luckily.
Yeah. That's how you start small and build big.
Right.
Just a couple more minutes. I got two more questions for you, and they're quick and easy ones. We got a John Jeffers from Whiskey Myers on, and the Tornillo album drops on July 29th. Y'all are also on tour through August, and you have the Firewater Festival first weekend of October as well. My brother is a pretty big fan, and he saw you recently in Chicago. I think you guys played there about a month ago, two, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. He was at that show, so I had him give me a question. He wanted to know what inspired Frogman.
We had a couple of good buddies. Cody and Rich Robinson wrote that song from Black Crow. We had quite a few buddies, you know, not only growing up through the 9/11 stuff, but recently, you know, quite a few years ago, we had quite a few buddies that were Frog guys. And that influenced came directly from that, from all the stories that they've told us, you know, over the years. And I think Cody just had a pretty strong feeling to, you know, kind of state the obvious there. Ended up being one of my favorite songs for sure.
And why is John Wayne called John Wayne?
It only says it once at the very end of the song, and the background singers say John Wayne. I don't know why they picked John Wayne. I think we thought it was funny as hell. You know, it was, we were kind of rooting for John Wayne Awesome for the title of the song, because it makes absolutely no sense. You know, kind of just striking some mystique or intrigue there.
Yeah. Do you kind of bury other jokes in the lyrics or kind of in the album for just stuff for you guys to sort of laugh at when you hear it?
Absolutely. There's all kinds of buried stuff everywhere. So in this one, there's buried artwork in there for people to try to decipher and see what's going on. In the last one we had, you know, I designed the last artwork, and it had some really interesting blacklight stuff that was going on that takes a lot to figure out. But yeah, it's in the lyrics, it's in the artwork, it's everywhere.
Did you design this artwork as well?
I did not. I didn't do this one. I did not. I wish I was that good. He can draw a hell of a lot better than I can.
It's like a heart hand grenade kind of thing.
Yeah, it's got like speakers, and it looks like a grenade, and it's got a bunch of speakers in it, and there's all kinds of stuff going on.
It's John Jeffers from Whiskey Myers, man. That's all I got for you. I really appreciate you joining the podcast today.
Dude, thanks, Billy. I appreciate you taking the time, man. Anytime, I'm here.
That's Billy Dukes and John Jeffers of Whiskey Myers. The group's Tornillo album drops in July, and the Firewater Festival is scheduled for September 29th in Kansas City. I'm Addison Hager, and there's more to come as we get ready for Season 2 of Yellowstone, premiering on November 13th on the Paramount Network. Last year, we were able to give exclusive cast interviews, and we hope to do the same again this season. So tap follow so you never miss a moment. Denton Rules is written by Billy Dukes and myself, with help from Sterling Whitaker, and produced by Billy Dukes. Big thanks for making us the top Yellowstone After Show podcast available, and be sure to find us on YouTube for more analysis. As always, Denton Rules, a Yellowstone 1923 podcast, is another great Town Square Media podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.